Let's talk to Professor Scott Lucas, American political and international relations expert at Birmingham University, who joins us now. Good morning to you, Scott.
Morning, Julia.
Good morning. So we're going to talk about Donald Trump on a visit to the Middle East. As I said earlier, what could possibly go wrong? He's just arrived in Israel, but let's talk over a little bit, if we can, his visit to Saudi Arabia. First of all, the choice of Saudi Arabia as the first ever foreign visit by Donald Trump as a president did raise a few eyebrows. Why did he choose Saudi Arabia?
Because it was part of this wider thing that he's going to the center of the world's three religions. So Saudi Arabia for Islam, Israel for Judaism, Rome, and the Vatican for Christianity. So that was a nice spin. The reality of it and why he eventually wound up there, despite his hostile comments about Saudi Arabia in the past, is money, lots of money. The Saudis wanted to complete a $110 billion arms deal, arrangements for which started under the Obama administration. That's $350 billion over 10 years. And the Saudis were also offering to invest billions of dollars into the U.S. economy, which, of course, Trump can play back home as jobs, 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 which would be an interesting, useful diversion from the focus on possible Trump ties with Russia.
So it was really all about the money.
Yeah, that's for Trump. It is. I mean, if you actually look at his statements and if you look at where he was most comfortable in the centerpiece speech yesterday, it was when he was talking about that idea that of this great economic benefits. And thank you, King Salman, for investing in our America. When it got onto the wider issues, which is, for example, will we see an Arab coalition aligned against Iran? Issues such as Saudi Arabia's deadly military involvement in the Yemen civil war, you know, Trump really doesn't have enough of a grasp for those issues to do anything more than recite some lines.
Well, we were going to be talking about that speech in just a second. First of all, talking about the issue, we say how these things play out in the American media. The decision by his wife, Melania, and his daughter, Ivanka, who of course joined him on the trip along with all the other senior figures in the Trump administration. They arrived. They didn't cover their heads. They wore pretty demure dresses, or in the case of Melania, a long trouser suit, looking very glamorous, I have to say. But they didn't cover their heads. Now, only a few years ago, when Michelle Obama made a visit with President Obama for the Saudi for a funeral, she didn't cover her head, and Donald Trump was busy on Twitter criticizing her for that. But I imagine the idea that his wife and daughter should cover their heads would have gone down very badly with a lot of Trump supporters.
Yeah, let me say two things here. The first is, I think a lot of the sniping over, you know, oh, Melania didn't cover her head and Ivanka didn't cover, I thought it was irrelevant or tangential fluff, because a lot of foreign women in Saudi Arabia don't cover up and don't have to cover up when they're there. And so this seemed a little bit of press sniping at Trump. But the second point is the one that you raise, and that is Trump leaves himself open to the charge of hypocrisy because he has said in the past, oh, look, you know, in this case, Michelle Obama, you know, insulted her host. But perhaps more importantly, in the past couple of years, Donald Trump has said about Saudi Arabia that they have been freeloading off the United States, that they kill gays, that they are an evil society. Yet here was the same Donald Trump in Saudi this week saying none of those things. Quite happy to get some love from King Salman and all the Saudi monarchy.
Well, we also saw some extraordinary situations where there was some dancing, there was some bizarre sort of hands on some glowing orb. I'm not quite sure what that was all about after his speech. But also he received a medal, effectively sort of a gold sort of badge to wear around his neck. Now, he was very critical of President Obama for bowing, as is a Saudi custom. You know, the American presidents don't bow to any foreign leader. They are also a head of state. But he appeared to curtsy, to kneel, yeah, to sort of to go down on his knees. It was quite the most bizarre bit of footage.
It was like he didn't know whether to bow, curtsy, fall on the floor, or stand up straight. And so it was a mix of all four. And it just, again, is the highlight of that Donald Trump is a politician who has been built on two things. He's been built on criticism of others, which a lot of his supporters like. So attacks on Obama and Clinton. And he's been built on this, you know, self-image, this self-confidence. And in that one shot of him with King Salman, both those issues came to the fore. Wait a minute. This is the guy who said he would never bow down, and here he is, and we're not quite sure where he's going to wind up next. In itself, I don't think the incident is that significant. But on a wider issue, so much of the Trump administration now is not about policy. It's where this president is seen or what he says next and how we immediately react to it. And that was what the purpose of this trip was, that beyond the money that you and I have talked about, it was to project Trump as a leader, someone who is beyond, you know, cozying up to the Russians and getting himself into trouble, someone who is beyond going on Twitter at 6:30 in the morning U.S. time and saying really daft things. How much of that image of leadership remains after the next week when he returns to the U.S., yeah, I think will be important.
Well, indeed, if he doesn't put a foot wrong. But, of course, he made this major speech. I mean, I saw yesterday he's making a major speech on, you know, on Islam. I just thought, oh, my God. And it was about Islamism, obviously. Yeah. But he, one of the paragraphs, you know, a better future is only possible, he said, if your nations, he said, drive out the terrorists and extremists. Drive them out, he said. Drive them out of your places of worship. Drive them out of your communities. Drive them out of your holy land and drive them out of this earth. And I think you sing that to the tune of Lock Her Up, which he was always say about Hillary Clinton during his campaign trail times. But it seemed to be a rather bizarre thing that he should be telling the Saudi authorities, who are pretty much the biggest sponsorship of extremist Salafist Wahhabi, you know, Islamism and terrorism and sponsorships of extremism in the Middle East and across the world, that he should be telling them to drive it out. I mean, how well did that sit with the Saudi hosts?
Well, I think the Saudi host knew what to expect from Trump. And as long as he stayed on script and didn't go off message and say, you know, I don't like anybody in the Islamic world. By the way, you know, I have that Muslim ban that I tried to introduce in the U.S.
Yes.
As long as he didn't do that, they're okay with that. I think the point beyond that is that what you heard in Trump's speech yesterday about extremism, you know, you could have heard that from George W. Bush in 2001. You know, the battle between good and evil. Driving the terrorist out, as you note, in this case because of 9/11, Trump didn't really give us any idea of, well, what does that mean in the battle of extremism? So let's cite just a few things here. One, there's the Syrian civil war, the Syrian conflict, which is now in its seventh year and is probably destabilizing and behind a lot of extremism. Trump didn't give us anything on that. Two, he didn't really give us anything on the Islamic State. I mean, how are you really going to deal with the Islamic State and the fact that it is a social and political and religious group as well as a terrorist group? Three, how are you going to deal with the wider social and economic issues within many of these societies in the Middle East and North Africa without preaching to folks but showing you have an understanding of what is happening? And four, what are you going to do about Israel and Palestine, which he may try to tell us what he's going to do on the next stop of his tour?
Well, I was just going to bring you to that. Of course, he's arrived in Israel, and he's been very much feted by the Israeli Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, who had no time for President Obama at all. It was really obvious these were two men who did not see eye to eye at all. He's been rolling out the red carpet for Donald Trump. Is there any hopes of some revival of the Middle East peace conflict, the whole, for want of a better phrase, the holy grail of a political memorial to any president to sort out the Middle East? Is it likely that Donald Trump's the man to do it? He's supposed to be the big deal maker.
No.
Okay.
For better or worse.
And let's go to the travel.
for better or worse, Donald Trump ain't no Bill Clinton, right? And so we're not, you know, he'll talk this, oh, I'll bring peace between the Israelis and the Palestinians and sweetness and light and honey, you know, honey everywhere. No, it ain't going to happen. Because Trump doesn't really have a grasp of those issues.
Well, he doesn't do detail, does he? I mean, even just things like, you know, Jerusalem being the capital of Israel, fact that there is a reason why most Western countries don't recognize that it is the capital.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, here's what the Israel trip does. First of all, it reassures the Israelis, who have their own $38 billion arms deal with the United States, that Saudi Arabia doesn't get all the goodies. Secondly, it helps Netanyahu in his own battle with the Israeli establishment. Netanyahu would like to take a harder line with Iran. Netanyahu does not want any type of significant talks with the Palestinians. He doesn't really want to go there. So he gets to have the photo ops with Trump, whereas the Israeli military and the Israeli intelligence services, who, by the way, are furious with Trump over leaking their intelligence to Russia a couple of weeks ago, they have to sort of watch from the sidelines. So we're going to get a lot more of public expressions of alliance without really any substance about where we go next on either the Israel-Palestine issue or the regional issues.
Absolutely fascinating times. We shall see what develops over the next couple of days. Always a pleasure to speak to you. So Professor Scott Lucas is an expert on American political and international relations at Birmingham University. If only Donald Trump was an expert on American political and international relations, things would go so much better.